Okay, we are on to Super Tatties for Emmore. Now, our stories, we've got a few interesting ones. The first one actually relates to a Shyla that was asked to Rav Steinman that I thought was really, you know, quite a remarkable and jarring lekach that he was discussing somebody in Yanei Halacha, and it came up the question with respect to a fruit with Shechianu. We say, generally, we use a fruit to say Birkas Shechianu, for example, for the for Rosh Hashanah, to, and people have a minhag still even today. Some will say a Shechianu on a new fruit, and he was addressing the question of what happens if somebody's machabir a sefer. Why is it that they would be, you know, they could spend a whole decade of their life writing a sefer, put their heart and soul into it, and not say Shechianu, whereas in distinction, they buy a new fruit in the store, they eat it, it's 1 minute on their lips, and then it's gone. And not only that, but lichura, a sefer is completely nitzchius. You know, this is Torah, it's, you know, it's something which is supposed to be right at the heart of our lives. And although I love fruit as much as the next guy, a fruit is just a piece of fruit. So the answer that I saw that he gave was actually quite jarring. And he suggested that the reason why is a fruit is Dvar Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu made the fruit. He designed the fruit. Everything comes from Hashem. But when we write Chidushei Torah, we could put 10 years of our life. We can put blood, sweat, and tears, all the amelus into it, but we don't know if there's a drop of MS in it. So if that's true, then we don't know whether or not it's shayach for Birkas HaShevach. So obviously that underscores the extraordinary need to make sure that when we are learning, we are trying to make sure we actually get things right as opposed to going through a mechanical process. I heard that the Gra gave a extraordinary amount of deference to his first teacher who taught him the Aleph Beis. And the reason was that he knew that that teacher taught him the MS, whereas everything afterward was subject to scrutiny and critical review. So again, that underscores the idea for all of us that we need to treat whatever we're studying and what we're hearing from somebody else with a critical eye to make sure we're mechavin to MS with our learning. Next is a story about Rav Zundel Misalant. Rav Zundel Misalant was Rav Yisrael Salanter's Rebbe and a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhiner. So it's in the same, now after a story of the Gro, we can do this, and I'll try to, I think I have a Rav Itzla later, so we've got a couple of interesting things in that line today. So one time somebody saw him far from his house, and he was sitting like on the street, doing something very strange, like arranging rocks on the street to make sure that the ones that were like sticking out were kind of more orderly, so people would walk on it when it had rained without soiling their shoes. And he was asked, "Well, what are you doing?" And he answered. He said, "Well, when my mother walks to shul, she's going to walk in this way, and I want to make it that she can walk the whole way on this path without dirtying her shoes." So we can see from him how far he takes the mitzvah of kibud av v'im. Obviously, that's a very a very extreme expression, but even that sort of consideration, you know, even something like that comes to mind is something to take heed of how far we're supposed to be taking into mind the feelings of other people, and of course the opportunity to be machabed, people who deserve kavod, and certainly our parents. So next is a story about the altar of Kelm, which I like very much. And it says that he had an hanhaga on Friday nights that he would pause when he, on his way back from davening, he would pause at the doorway for a moment, and you know, people noticed that he would pause, so they said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Look, I'm about to go into my home, and Bezras Hashem, it's going to look beautiful, it's going to smell beautiful, it's going to taste beautiful, is going to have all these things. I need to take a minute to just try to, you know, imagine how much my wife has invested to put into this, so I'm not completely kafui tof. I need to like try to guess, you know, some of the things that she did, so I can come in and you know, thank her appropriately. So obviously, everybody on this call doesn't need to be reminded to thank their wives, but how we thank our wives, the detail we thank our wives, and the way that we thank them is obviously very important, as well as all the other people who deserve thanks. Okay. So that was a fun one. I came across a couple interesting things. We're holding in Sfiras HaOmer, and this is an opinion that I am also kind of very, very fond of. It's a question, you know, the Nihugei Avelus during the period of Sfiras HaOmer are there because of the death of the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva. And it is extremely curious to think about, especially in light of the fact that Rabbi Akiva is the voice we learned in Rashi last week, where he's the one jumping up and down saying, "V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, z'klal gadol b'Torah." So if this was one of his, I mean, it's not just a song, it's, you know, all, you know, obviously something that he was very strong in saying and sharing, how could it be that his Talmidim lo nahagu kavod zelaza? How could they arrive at, you know, a state where they're so devoid of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha on its face? So the Shem Mishmuel has an extraordinary chiddush and says the reason why they weren't able to be noeg kavod zelaza is because they viewed each other as all cogs in the same wheel. It's not that they were so distant from each other, said differently. It's that they were so close to each other that they believed that kavod wasn't necessary. You know, I heard somebody once say, manners are for people who I don't care about. You know, kavod is for people I don't care about. But when, you know, the people I love, the people near and dear to me, they already know that I love them. They already know that I care about them. They already know how I feel about them. So why do I need to say please and thank you and, you know, and be considerate on all these other things? It's, you know, business. Boom, 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 boom. You know, and when people get that way, and this can be with a chavrusa or a spouse or a child or a parent or, you know, when you get so open and so close, sometimes we lose formalities. And when you lose formalities, sometimes you don't notice it, but you can end up hurting somebody. You get to a place where lo nagu kavod zelaza, because you're close, that's a completely different malady from lo nagu kavod zelaza, because you're far. And I think the lekach from that position is a very, very important one for all of us, is that we will never really know the moment where a lack of formality gets us into a painful situation where we end up hurting somebody's feelings and we don't really know. So it's okay often to err on the side of being a little bit more kavodic and trying to read the room. So I like that one very much. This next piece is on the concept of a Mikra Kodesh, and it's based on two different pieces. First one is from the Meshech Chochmah. What is the idea of a Mikra Kodesh? He says the Mikra Kodesh fundamentally served as the a purpose to get Klal Yisrael together. That's why we have all these ideas about trying to get people from far to be able to do Aliyah LeRegel, and it's a Mikra Kodesh specifically because the idea is we want to get all of Klal Yisrael together at least three times a year to be together. Not only to be together, but to be together in front of Kadosh Baruch Hu. And what that does is it actually creates a kirva between Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Ginsburg, I saw was Mosif on this point. He said that Shabbos is supposed to be working on our avoda as we are people, but on Yontif, we're supposed to be working on our avoda as a part of all of Klal Yisrael, because one of the purposes of a Yontif is to charge Klal Yisrael to, you know, to be actually a nation and to bring them and to bring them together. So I thought that it's a wonderful idea to think of an extra added dimension to Yontif, is that it's supposed to be not only connecting to the Ribono Shel Olam, but connecting to the Ribono Shel Olam people, Lifnei Hashem. So the last one is a piece of the first Mishnah of the third Perek. I thought we should try to do some Avos during this period, and I did last week, so I'm going to try to do it again, is the piece in Akavya ben Mahalalel. And honestly, often, I mean, it's a downer. You know, often people don't spend too much time on this Mishnah because we like to, you know, we like to look for, you know, super, super uplifting things. And people also are hoping to be able to, to inspire. And this one is, you know, basically, how do you make spiritual damage control? So he says you need to look at three things to not get to an avera: know where you came from, know where you're going, and who you're going to do din v'cheshbon. You came from a putrid drop. You are going to a place. You're basically going to be eaten by worms, and you have din v'cheshbon. You're going to have judgment in front of a kadosh baruch hu. So the milei de'avos of Rav Itzel of Elazhin has a wonderful arichus on this mishnah. And it's too much for me to say here, but I will mention one of the things he says, which is probably maybe the easiest to understand, is that there's a mushal. He says a mushal about there's a child of a family of Talmidei Chachamim that is traveling through the country to go on his way to go learn in yeshiva. And, you know, his travels are more than one day, and they're more than 2 days, and he needs to stop at a appropriate inn to be able to rest for the night and to eat and to replenish and all that. And he stops at a inn that's run by a gvir and his family. And when he's there, they treat him nicely, they feed him, they take care of him and do everything. But obviously the inn is kind of run in more of a way connected to the Havlei HaOlam. They live, quote unquote, the good life. Obviously, it's kind of tongue in cheek, but, you know, they're eating the finest foods and engaging in many of the frivolities of the world. And while he's there, he makes friends with the son of the Gvir. And the son of the Gvir takes a liking to him and really takes him under his wing. And he says, okay, here, when you have the wine, you smell the cork, you have the whiskey, you sip it a little bit, you do this, you do that, and the two of them start becoming close, and perhaps too close. And at a certain point in time, this Ben Gvir has now taken him, you know, a little far astray from the path of this child that was before a Merkava L'Shechina, you know, on his way to, you know, to become a giant Talmud Chacham. And somebody finally gets wind of this and gives them both Shtark Musser. To the boy, he says, listen, you know, you are on a path to greatness. You know, you are sitting there, you gotta get moving, get back to learning. You know, you shouldn't be involved in this sort of stuff. Maybe this is for Balabatim, but not for you. And to the Ben Gvir, he says, listen, if you want to live a life of frivolity, that's up to you, but don't you dare bring down this, you know, this child who's really being raised for greatness. And Rav Itzla says, this is a mushal for the neshama and the goof. He says, the musar to the neshama is, you came from the kisei akavod. Know where you came from, know where you're going, know what you need to do, know what your role is in this world. And he says, that's what Akavya ben Mahalalel says, when that musar is, lifnei ata asid liten din v'cheshbon lifnei melech mochei amlochim akadosh baruch hu. That's to the neshama. And the musar to the Ben Gvir is to the goof. It says, listen, body, you are here to serve the neshama. but you eventually will be put in the ground and will not be for Lenetzach Netzachim. You are terminal. And if you want to do what you need to do, earthly things, that's fine. But stay in your lane and do not get in the way of that holy neshama. So that's the muster that we need to remember of the interplay between the neshama and the goof. The thinking question very quickly is the Mesilas Yesharim, as we know, just on this very story, says that the neshama and the goof are together, and the neshama is like a princess, and the goof is like a commoner. And the commoner tries to bring the princess everything from this world, and the princess doesn't want it because she's royalty. It just doesn't resonate with her. So with this and the mashal from Rav Itzel in hand, you can ask your families and see what they would say. If that's true, what does the neshama see in the goof anyway? Shkoyach, guys. Thank you.